south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, according to recent emails I've been getting, people are kind of worried about me. They think I'm either dead or scorched or buried under lava or ashes. Well, I assure you, the reports of my demise have been slightly exaggerated. You know, you've heard me talk about volcanoes before, and Latin America is just filled with them. There are hundreds of them, and maybe only 5 or 10 active ones. What I mean by that is that they're constantly blowing a little plume or sometimes shooting a little lava. I'm talking about a little lava and a little plume. And of course, it always stinks of sulfur. So, for example, if you're standing at the base of one of these things, you sometimes feel a little heat and you see some smoke, but you never get sprayed with any ash or lava or anything. But you see, at the very peak, there's something going on, and at night, sometimes it's glowing charcoal red. Those are the characteristics of your long-term smoldering active volcano. Believe me, some of them are smoldering low-key for years, decades, even centuries. And people get so used to the predictability of that, especially since some of them are that way for generations. People really forget, at their own risk too, that they're really sleeping monsters. And it's well known that people have short memories. I mean, look at how people rebuild in the same places right after a flood. So after a volcano's been smoldering low-key after dozens of years or even centuries, little towns and villages will grow up around them. I mean, look at Pompeii, right? There's one called Arenal, for example, in Costa Rica that is a real tourist spot. There are little hotels and bungalows and hot springs all around it. Tourists come from all around to spend the night there. They've even got some nice hotels right up the side of the mountain. And what's cool about it is you see about every 5 or 6 hours, the ground shakes a little bit, you know? There are predictable localized earthquakes. I've been there. But you see, all that development's very risky. You could lose it all in a flash because active volcanoes are sleeping giants and sometimes they blow in a big way. So that's why I recommend to gringos, expats, and tourists, go ahead, visit them. Do a climb up to the top. People love that stuff. There's always tours and guides and, well, organized excursions. I've done a few of them. Hey, it's human nature. We love thrills. Skydiving, hang gliding, extreme sports, roller coasters. And we all know once in a while people die while doing those things. But that doesn't stop most people because they know there's a very slim chance you'll actually get hurt or die. I mean, look at the airlines, right? And the funny thing is, over the years I've heard many geologists and volcanologists, I think that's the word, talk about how a volcano that's steadily smoldering year after year, well, that's a good thing and a pretty safe bet that it's never going to blow big time because it's releasing the pressure little by little. I'm sure you've heard that theory before. And so there's a slim chance there'll be a massive blow off, kind of like slowly twisting the cap off of a soda or beer bottle to keep the bubbles at bay. Well, you know, in the last couple of years, a lot of holes have been punched in that theory. And by the way, the land around active volcanoes is very cheap, sometimes free, which is why you'll always see little manicured plots of farmland and little shacks all over the place. And these are the people that will suffer when the big blow comes, and eventually they do. Like, for example, the case last Sunday in Guatemala, where Volcán de Fuego blew big time. What do you think Volcán de Fuego means? It means the volcano of fire, because it's an active one, and it's always smoldering. By the way, it usually has a big blow-off about every 12 to 20 years. And everyone who lives around there knows that. Yet, every time there's a blow-off and some people die, after a year or two, the people start moving back, the shacks start popping up again, those plots of land get developed for beans, papayas, avocados, whatever, because, you know, volcanic soil is some of the richest in the world. Ask Mrs. Olson, you know, the lady from the Folgers commercial? There I go, showing my age again. So again, anyone who lives within around 10 miles of an active volcano is really rolling the dice. In fact, some very wealthy Latin idiots built a fantastic PGA golf course right next to that volcano. In fact, You may have heard me say before, it's the only golf course in the world, or I should say it was the only golf course in the world, where you could tee off, I think it was on the 17th hole, right towards the side of that very active volcano where there is always a little bit of a lava flow. Whoa. I mean, hell, it's a fantastic experience to see that and play that course. I've done it. But really, the guys who planned and built that thing, they were first world people all the way. It's a PGA course, one of the finest in the world, designed and built by first world lughead Americans. But now, that course is no more. And that's a loss of untold millions of dollars. And you got to wonder, how could people be that stupid? In fact, I'd say most of that golf course is within 1 to 2 miles of the base of that volcano. Now, you've heard me say that I wouldn't recommend anyone live any closer than 10 miles from an active volcano. Oh, by the way, you should look up that golf course on the internet. It's called La Reunion, like Reunion. You'll see that thing was rated, up till last Sunday, one of the top golf courses in the world. But one small consolation comes out of the fact that that course is no more. Now, you see, according to one of the past members of that golf course, the famous John Galt, who was himself a terrific golfer, he actually had a golf scholarship in college, so you know he's addicted to the sport. He loved that course and said it was the finest one he'd ever played on. But he also told me that since this is Latin America and rich Latins belong to that course, and Latins, whether they're rich or not, rarely pay their bills on time. Yep, you've heard me say that before, and why I don't advise you being a landlord down here. Anyway, good old John Galt told me a while back that the course was heavily in the red because the members were up to almost $500,000 behind in their monthly dues. And you know what happens when you're behind on your dues if you belong to a course up in the States? Well, they don't allow you to play on it. You can't check into the clubhouse. And old John Galt, he said, that doesn't make one bit of difference to Latins because they only join the golf course for prestige. They never really play on it. They just buy the best clubs, best clothes, bags, and balls, put them in their locker, and never really get out on the course. Because he said it's all about the prestige and the show of belonging, being a member. Because it was designed and built as the best course in Latin America, all the high rollers bought memberships and condos on the course. But you have to pay monthly dues also. And since most of them don't golf, and in fact, most of them never even go out to the course at all, there's no pressure on them to pay their dues. So on the bright side, that absolves those wealthy deadbeats of getting further behind on their payments. Now, as far as inactive volcanoes, of which there are hundreds in Latin America, well, the word inactive means it's never blown in recorded history. And recorded history in Latin America goes back 500 years with the Spanish and many thousands of years with the Incas, Mayans, and Aztecs. So there's really no problem at all living near the base of an inactive volcano because, well, if it hasn't blown off in a couple thousand years, you can expect it's not going to do it ever again and not in your lifetime. However, anything's possible. For example, you could be living in Idaho and have a huge earthquake, though they've never happened there before. But anything's possible. Lots of really crazy earth changes lately, wouldn't you agree? So in the end, over 60 people died in that recent volcanic blowout in Guatemala. And think of the countless hundreds, maybe even thousands, of roasted driveway chickens. Ooh. Hey, don't send me any hate mail on that one. I'm just trying to lighten things up here. Anyway, let's talk about the people. All of them were dirt poor. And though that volcano itself is quite close to the colonial city of Antigua, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, so it's kind of the most touristy area in Guatemala, I'd say, though it's nowhere near Costa Rica-style tourism. It's what you might call ecotourism. You know, do-gooders, tree-huggers, backpackers, and hikers. Yeah, right. Outdoors people who want to hike those volcanoes. And Antigua, Guatemala is known for its very cheap Spanish schools and Spanish immersion homes and programs. So in a way, it's a backpacker's paradise and really a great place to hang out and learn your Spanish. But it's also only around 10 miles from the volcano that just blew, which I've mentioned before is my personal limit for living near an active volcano. So what happened with Antigua? Well, it got a nice dusting of ash. So it'll be about a week or so to clean that up. I know what it's like. And even though in my place in the coffee fields, I'd say I'm about 25 miles away from that one, and I'm about 35 miles away from another active one, the fact is there were two times in the past, I'd say 7 or 8 years, where the place where I live got a small dusting of ash, only because when the other volcano blew, the winds just happened to be high and blowing in my direction. So what happens then? Well, your maintenance guy or you or your cleaning lady or all three of you go for the brooms and dustpans and that big old heavy-duty Sears or whatever wet dry vac. Yep, you heard me say in a past show, you really do need a heavy-duty wet dry vac. And I don't mean in case of volcanic ash. That might never happen to you. It's just that it comes in handy for so many uses. All right, so twice it's happened to me. And note, in those two cases, none of the dust got into the house, unless I or the cleaning lady tracked it in ourselves, and I'm sure there was some of that. But in those two cases, I'm talking about a very thin layer of ash, probably only around a 32nd of an inch. But like I said, it's only happened to me twice in the 27-plus years I've been down here. So even if you're within 25, 50, even 100 miles of an active volcano, if it really blows and the wind is coming your way, you could get a little dusting. And that ash is acidic, so it will burn your eyes and your lungs. So the question is it over? Is Volcán de Fuego done spilling its guts? Well, who knows, but I can tell you this. When it calms down completely and everything's back to normal and the ash is all swept away and there's new growth of vegetation, the poor people will come right back and build those laminate huts with the dirt floors. And once again, there'll be small-time farmers growing stuff right up the side of the volcano. And as mentioned previously, Guatemala's busiest, somewhat touristy area, Antigua, is at about the 10-mile limit. And you know how many gringos died and how many gringos got injured? According to the news so far, a grand total of zero. Though I did see on the Spanish TV news here that there was one gringo trekking that mountain at the time and they rescued him. They showed him on TV, looked like he fell in a vat of mud. Meanwhile, as usual, the do-gooders and international help is coming. And for all the pain and the deaths and the injuries and the gnashing of teeth, here's the biggest problem as I see it. There's this government agency in Guatemala called CONRED, and every Latin American country has one too, only with slightly different letters in the acronym. And it stands for, loosely translated, the National Disaster Response Agency. You could say they're just a bad Latin copy of the U.S. agency FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which says it all because FEMA sucks. Remember Katrina? And like up in the States, down here, these are the guys that are supposed to be trained in emergency medical procedures, etc., and they go in and help out people who have been affected by national disasters. Anyway, if you're down here in Latin America long enough, you'll notice if you're watching the local TV news or any of the local TV stations at all, wherever you are, you'll see the occasional public service announcement coming from that disaster response agency, CONRED, or whatever they're calling it in your Latin country. You'll see these fat-ass bureaucrats with their orange vests and helmets talking about the rainy season and the floods and earthquakes. And basically, it's just a whole group of government employees sitting on their fat asses in government offices, sitting there surfing the net or on Facebook all day, putting out press releases nobody reads, and even appearing on TV once in a while when there's a hurricane or disaster. They tell you they're here to help you and give you hour-by-hour reports on whatever disaster is going down right now. But these are guys with soft hands who never get themselves dirty, it seems. But you know, the sad thing is, we've been seeing in the last few days with this volcano blow-off and more than 50 people dead, is an exact repeat of what happens every other time a volcano blows off. The lower middle class and very poor people who are living in shacks around that mountain either die, get injured, or displaced. And there's no way those government slugs from that so-called disaster relief agency can get to the site for hours and hours. And by then, all the damage is done. And they claim they're on the job 24/7 and have all the equipment to predict that stuff. And the people who are around to help and are digging people out are usually the bomberos, that would be the local firemen, and the citizens living nearby. And unfortunately, how it turns out is that at least half of the people who die or get really injured are the same ones who've been living there a long, long time, even generations, and they should know better. But it always seems to go like this. They see suddenly that their volcano is making a few different moves. Something's not right. And instead of having a plan, they just stand there and watch and say to their neighbors, "Look, the volcano's acting up. Isn't that amazing?" Yeah, it's amazing and fun to watch till the lava starts flowing and the ash cloud starts rolling down the mountain. Now, unfortunately, sad stories are coming out right now. In fact, one I just heard is there a bunch of kids standing on a bridge about a mile from the base of the volcano, just excited to watch the thing blow. And when the pyroclastic cloud rolled in, they got fried. So what's the government disaster relief organization doing about cases like that? I mean, before the fact, so these kids know what to do. So they have a plan. Man, I'd just like to line up all those government slugs and give them a bunch of Molarian curly slaps across the kisser. I mean, come on, don't you think job number one for them would be to go to the local schools, maybe every 6 months or so, and give them a little demonstration for 10 minutes on what the hell to do? And maybe even hand out some cheap masks they can put on, because that'll save half the lives right there. Or forget the masks, just teach them how to wrap a little towel on their face, make it the first priority, so they can breathe while they get the hell out. And really, job number two for these government fat asses is to prohibit anyone from living within around 5 miles from the base. Sure, that's still pretty close, but it gives you a lot of wiggle room when the feces hits the ventilator. Now, that's not to say you kick out the farmers. They can still have their little plots, as precarious as they might be, but they just can't have their houses and their kids in the red zone. But no, we're talking about a government agency where everyone's got poop for brains, which only goes to show that governments all over the world are corrupt, malignant dinosaurs who just want to get on Facebook and collect their paychecks. So anyway, contrary to what you might believe or what you might have heard, the rumors of my demise are slightly exaggerated. By the way, I stole that line from Mark Twain. Anyway, for all of you who've been paying attention, you know I'm having my seminar in about a month now. It'll be taking place in and around Guatemala City and in that UNESCO World Heritage City, Antigua, Guatemala, which I just mentioned got a good dusting from the volcano. But as usual, since people are used to volcanoes and earthquakes and other natural disasters, they know how to do the cleanup in the aftermath. So in a week or so, things should be back to normal. Only you might see some piles of ash around the side streets like you do up in the States after a big snow. But you know, for people coming to the seminar, that'll give them a sight to see, because when we're doing the rounds through Antigua, we'll surely take a ride down the big highway that now is blocked by a gigantic slab of lava. Now, that's something you don't see every day. All right, speaking of my July seminar, it's coming up in about exactly a month now. Still have a few spaces open, so for sign-up information and details, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. All right, shifting gears for a second. You know, the other day, this expat gringo I know quite well was walking down the street and he wasn't paying attention, typical for gringos. His foot slipped on a piece of broken concrete, he fell down, skinned up his leg something fierce, and twisted his ankle and it swelled up to twice its size. And he's been here long enough, he should know better. And you know what? About a year and a half ago, he did exactly the same thing. That time, our stupid gringo wasn't watching again, slipped on a slippery metal grate, fell down, and it was more serious. That time, he tore his Achilles tendon and had to wear a cast and get on crutches for a month and a half. And wouldn't you know it, just last week, it happened to him again. So here's the thing. When you look around at people, whether in their cars or they're walking down the street, half of them are screwing around with their devices and not paying attention to anything. And apart from the fact that you might get nailed by a pickpocket anywhere, in any big city in Latin America or the world, the problem is, you see, in Latin America, in the third world, your basic infrastructure maintenance is inadequate at best and sometimes downright terrible. In fact, I can honestly say when you're walking down the sidewalk in any Latin city, town, or village, you have to be alert. You really do have to check where you're walking. And I mean it. On every city block, there's a lawsuit waiting to happen. But down here, you know, you can't sue anybody, especially not the government, which in a way is a good thing. But the lack of maintenance sure isn't. So it's a case of, as it should be, being aware. And, you know, everything's a risk. I mean, every time you walk out the door, even in your house. In fact, statistics show the most dangerous places in America are, guess where? Not on the job or outside, but in your own home. People fall and trip and cut and burn themselves all the time. At home. Hell, that doesn't happen at Walmart, right? And if it did, you'd sue them. So anyway, most people have the double whammy now of all those screens to look at. So they're walking down the street, looking at the screens, talking on the phone, sporting earbuds. They just don't have much situational awareness. Neither did that idiot gringo I just mentioned. Now, I repeat, walking down the streets of Latin America, especially in older parts of any town, is not much like walking down Main Street USA as far as the path you actually have to step on. Because not only will you repeatedly see sidewalks that are cracked and heaving with chunks missing. I'd say about every third or fourth utility cover, you know, those brass or concrete hatches that you see once in a while when you're walking along the street, access points to wires and valves and water pipes and such. Well, I'd say about one in five of those things are completely missing, meaning stolen, especially if they're made out of a metal like brass or cast iron that can be taken to a local recycling center and sold for a few pesos or lempiras. But not to worry, as long as you make it a habit to glance down once in a while, it's ridiculously easy to avoid the pitfalls. But by no means should you have your head down all the time. That's stupid. I mean, look, situational awareness by definition means you know what's going around all around you, not just by your feet. But really, the big problem these days are those devices. Man, there's such a screen addiction thing going on these days, even here in Latin America, with shoeshine boys, that you gotta wonder what it's gonna be like in a couple of years, since just about 3 to 5 years ago, hardly anyone here in Latin America even had a smartphone. And back then, the cost for the average Latin was out of this world. Though now, for $30 or $40, you can get a phone with a nice screen that'll have WhatsApp on it and Waze and Fakebook twaddle. So locals can now buy lower IQ smartphones to link up to their three favorite services. They can talk to their friends and such practically forever. Fakebook, twaddle, and WhatsApp. And that's all because it's voice over the internet. And they know with their internet plans, they don't have to pay hefty phone charges, at least hefty for them. So it's true, nowadays, a good percentage of Latin Americans are addicted to their devices, but still not as much as you guys up in the States. We've got quite a bit of lag time there, too. So anyway, the lesson here is, don't be like everyone else. When ambling down the street, keep your eyes open. Because, you know, if you do slip and fall and hurt yourself, there's no one to sue. Though if you do, as I've often mentioned, you'll have a very good insurance plan for peanuts. But you know, a lot of towns and cities in Latin America have cobblestone roads and sidewalks. Why? Because they're cultural colonial sites. And some of them, just a few of them, are UNESCO World Heritage Sites. So you'll see very little cement pavement there. It'll almost all be hand-placed stones. But that shouldn't discourage you, even if you're an old-timer with a bastón, that's a cane, or a walker, or a wheelchair, because you do see valiant handicapped travelers all the time down here. And they enjoy the journey just as much as the next guy. Anyway, just a heads up there. Oh, and who was that idiot gringo who took 2 falls in 1 year, ended up with a sprained ankle, crutches, and a cast? That idiot was yours truly, Johnny. Hey, so it's been a wild week for me. What with the volcano, falling down and spraining my ankle. And just 2 days ago, I hit another motorcycle. That's 3 for me in 27 years. I guess that's pretty good. Considering if you drive a lot, you're going to have at least 3 near misses a month. So yes, it was the 3rd motorcycle hit for me. My first hit a while ago was when a motorcyclist ran a red light and I walloped him. Man, he was all over the road and so were pieces of his bike. 2nd time, a few years later, I was driving on a busy one-way road, about 4 lanes wide, heavy traffic, and a motorcyclist in a hurry, aren't they all? Decided to whip across 4 lanes of traffic. He made it through 3 lanes. I was in the final lane, kind of obscured by a truck to my left, and man, I nailed him good. And 3, that was just 2 days ago. Now, you know, the only way to stop motorcycles from weaving in and out of traffic alongside and in front of your car, even when you're stopped and there's a long line of traffic waiting to go at a stoplight, the only way to prevent that is to pull up very close to the next guy's bumper. Then the motorcyclist can't squeeze through. Oh, but they'll try. You just give them 1 foot of space and they'll find a way. So it's true, I've nailed 3 motorcycles. Well, what I'm saying is I nailed 3 motorcycles and put them out of commission permanently. No, not the drivers, just the bikes. But I can tell you, since I've been down here, at least 50 motorcycles have done damage to my car. That's usually when they're pulling up alongside of you, holding onto your bumper or mirror for balance, scraping your car as they go by, edging their way between you and the next car in a space you just can't believe they can wiggle through. Kind of like they say how a mouse can wiggle through a hole that's half the diameter of its head. Hey, here's a good idea. You know how those fighter pilots in World War I, like Eddie Rickenbacker and the Red Baron, and then in World War II, when they'd shot a plane down or made a kill, they'd stencil the enemy plane with an X through it on the fuselage of their airplane, or with a skull and crossbones. The more kills, the more stencils. I'm thinking someone ought to make a stencil with a motorcycle for just that purpose. You know, like those windshield stick people. I think if people started putting a few of those on their cars, the motorcycles would get the hint real fast. Oh, well, just another crazy idea, but Who knows? Could maybe sell a million of them on the internet. I mean, hell, there's 20 Latin countries, right? And think of the market you'd have for that in Asia and India. Ever see how those idiots drive? I mean, look, they've got cows and buffalo and elephants in the road, too. At least they don't have that down here in Latin America. Well, they do have the cows. Oh, and goats, and of course, chickens. Oh, and oxen, too. Yeah, even oxen. And man, you don't want to plow into the rear end of one of those guys. That happened to a Brazilian friend of mine. Neither his car, computer, nor his left leg were ever the same again. Oh, and don't forget, when you're out in the boonies, there are occasional horses and cows just wandering along the road at any time of day or night. Reason number 2426, why you don't want to drive at night if you don't have to. Oh, and while we're talking about roadway incidents, now here's something funny. The other day, I was in the center of a really big Latin city. And right in front of me, there happened to be a police cruiser pickup, a Toyota. They're almost all Toyotas down here in Latin America, you know? I don't know how that happens. They seem to be the number one choice of Latin police departments and ISIS, I guess. Toyota Hilux police cruisers, man, they're everywhere. Anyway, there's one in front of me. Now, we all know exactly what they look like and how much the bed holds, right? Well, get this. I counted 12 people in the back of that thing. 4 cops and, get this, 8 gangbangers all cuffed to each other. But I have to say, they didn't look like hardened gangbangers. They were more like gangbangers light. They had neck tats, but none of the evil-looking facial tats or expanded earlobe crap. Man, doesn't that drive you nuts? You know, when I see someone with an expanded earlobe, I'm thinking, he belongs to the minimum wage club. That's like their calling card, their union card. So have I offended any of you listeners out there who just might be sporting expanded earlobes? I'm thinking if I ever get in a fight with you, that would be my very first offensive move. Then I'm going for that nose ring. But where was I? Oh, yeah. There's 8 gangbangers handcuffed in the police pickup in front of me. Oh, and another reason I don't think they were very hardened gangbangers because they didn't have standard prison jumpsuits. But their heads were all shaved the same and they had a goofy little pattern cut into the hairline. You see a lot of that these days, you know, straight haircut on one side and the other side. Could be a swastika, the Mona Lisa, or even Jesus. But funny enough, for all the crazy haircuts I've seen here in Latin America, and you see them on the TV music channels too, don't you? I've yet to see anyone copy Trump's do. Probably because down here that wouldn't go so well. So why am I bringing this up about the gangbangers? Well, they and the cops were having a grand old time, laughing away. And you know how the Italians kind of talk with their hands? Well, the guys had these cuffs on and they were talking with the cuffs, motioning with them, pointing at things. I mean, really, it was like they were all good buddies, and maybe they were. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.